Should the audience take JFK at face value, or did you intend it to motivate people to re-examine history?
Well, I honestly don't answer. I don't understand this question. I think I've answered it in the above speech. These are one of these questions that are written before the speech, I suppose. Obviously, it's intended to make people think and to re-examine their history.
How in the world could the CIA, the FBI, the Mafia, the anti-Castroites, pro-Castroites, all involved, have all been involved and someone not break by this time?
This has been, I think, one of the central criticisms of the movie, and I don't think that people have really listened to what's in the movie, what the Donald Sutherland character who's playing X is saying. He says at one point that it's something that's in the wind, that there is a lot of disapproval of Kennedy. It is a conspiracy with no face. There is nothing on paper. There is plausible deniability. Only at the most secret point, at the film cuts to one phone call is made from someone at a higher level to someone at a mid-range level. This person at the mid-range level then, according to X character, puts into motion a plot run by mechanics, people who do this kind of work. These mechanics, in a cellularized form, do not know who they are working for. They don't even know the name of the person who gives them the phone call to do so-and-so. They don't even know the name of the other person. These are the mechanics of terrorism, the mechanics of guerrilla warfare. It is conceivable to me that this thing could have been very small, very limited in scope, and pulled off, as were many coup d'etats in many different countries all over the world. America is no different than a Central American, South American, or an Asiatic or European country. Coup d'etats occur. One must study the history of coups. The larger issue
is, I think, what we point to in the movie is that there seems to be a silent consent to a cover-up,
to a cover story, to a belief that Oswald did it alone, and in that, under those conditions, we get into the concept of two conspiracies, one conspiracy to kill the president and another conspiracy to cover it up.
Does the deep throat character played by Sutherland exist? Was he a composite?
I'm very glad this is asked, because so many people have asked me when they come out of the movie, who is X? And I think that many of our critics and our enemies have used... let me just say that X exists. He's here today on the podium. It is primarily Fletcher Prouty who's sitting here. Fletcher served in the military since World War II, and in the 1960s he was in the Pentagon as one of the chief focal officers, working with the Joint Chiefs of Staff and a liaison with the CIA. He did provided a lot of the military hardware for CIA covert operations, black operations, and it was Mr. Prouty who came to me 2 years ago and told me his story of the Pentagon and Kennedy from 1961 to 1963, and his own shock and belief at what happened, at the events that happened in those years. I subsequently used some of the information given to me by John Newman, based on his historical research into that period, and information you will see in his book, JFK in Vietnam. So X is primarily Fletcher, with an additional piece of information and substantiation given by John. X never met with Jim Garrison. He met with me. But I took the liberty of having the meeting occur between Mr. Garrison and X because Jim Garrison reached essentially the same conclusions in 1968 and 9 and wrote about them in his first book, Heritage of Stone, Mr. Garrison's conclusions were that the possible motive for Kennedy's slaying was the winding down of the Cold War. And for that reason, I think some people have misunderstood and claimed that X never existed and that I made him up. I never did. All this information comes from Fletcher Prouty and John Newman.
This questioner says, please speak to the credibility of Mr. Prouty.
I think Mr. Prouty has served his country and retired as a full colonel. He's written a book called The Secret Team, which is available for you to read. He has been critical of the CIA's illegitimate activities in the 50s and the 60s. He knows a lot about it. He briefed people like Alan Dulles, knew them, knew Richard Bissell, Charles Cabell, knew the atmosphere in the Pentagon at the time, knew Ed Lansdale. He retired in 1964, I believe, from the Pentagon and became a banker, studied banking, international banking, and the mechanics of where the money goes, because as you know, the CIA has quite a bit of it. And is now in retirement in Virginia, and I would urge you to question him yourselves. He's available after this press conference to talk with you and ask him as many questions as you want. His activities in later years are his business as far as I'm concerned. I am concerned with the 1960 period and the 1950 period.
Why would sophisticated assassins allow Abraham Zapruder to film the shooting at that vantage point?
Well, I think there were other films taken. It wasn't just Zapruder. There was a film taken by Nix, and there was a film taken by the babushka lady that has since we have a picture of a woman photographed in the assassination. She was at a very crucial point, too. So there were three or four people that were shooting films as well as still photographs. It wasn't in the assassin's interest to take a machine gun and assassinate everyone on the knoll. And if you stand behind the fence, you are blocked. Zapruder could not see you. There's some shrubbery there that blocks Zapruder's view of the fence shooter. In fact, when Zapruder panned around, and you can see it on the end of the Zapruder film, it is very difficult to see what's behind the fence, and no one has been able to. So I think they would have called a lot more attention to themselves by removing somebody like Zapruder, who came, by the way, probably at the last minute, as did a lot of these people.
Although the Zapruder film clearly makes the case for Kennedy being shot from the front, researcher David Lifton has suggested alterations were made in the film during its three-day possession by the CIA to cover up other clues in the film. Did you or your cinematographer detect any tampering in your copy of the film?
I'm going to pass this on to my researcher, and maybe we should move on to the next question, and then, because I don't know about this issue about tampering with the film.
Why would the Warren Commission, composed of both supporters and opponents of Kennedy, be united in a cover-up?
Well, one must not forget the history that the Warren Commission was divided, that I believe it was Boggs, Cooper, and Russell.
Is that correct?
Boggs, Cooper, and Russell wanted to have a dissenting report filed, and it was promised to them, and it was never filed. And several of those people did not go along with the magic bullet theory. In fact, the people who looked at the Zapruder film in that room with Arlen Specter, we have a report document that says that Specter was the only one in the room that came up with this magic bullet idea. None of the other people in that room believed it. So somehow that became the final word. I think that Hale Boggs in later years expressed many reservations. And I think that with the Warren Commission, it's a very interesting story and one that we didn't go into in depth, but I do think that there was a significant amount of pressure from Lyndon Johnson to move on with the story, not to get bogged down in a possibility of a conspiracy theory that pointed implied to Castro, and which would require, obviously, a war with Cuba. So I think that the Warren Commission is shown in the film acting in a way as if to reassure the American public that one assassin did it and not to really examine the evidence. I think that they, most of the Warren Commission, the 26 volumes that Mr. Garrison read, said that most of the witnesses in it are irrelevant. They have no information. And what, it just seems like a lot of it is stuffing. I don't think Mr. Warren wanted the job, and we have clear documentation that Mr. Johnson persuaded him strongly to take it. And obviously, as you know, the Warren Commission did not have key information, was not given to it by either the FBI or the CIA. They gave what they wanted to the Warren Commission. And Mr. Dulles, being on the Warren Commission, obviously knew, among other things, of the plots against Castro, and never mentioned to any of his confreres, as far as we know, the possibility that our own intelligence agency was involved in an assassination of a foreign leader, which obviously would have heavily influenced the thinking of the Warren Commission in another direction. If you can destabilize a foreign country, then why the hell can't you destabilize your own country?
Do you think the opening of the files will really prove anything? Won't all the material be missing?
In answer to the previous question on Lifton, a few frames are missing from the film because of a, quote, handling mishap, unquote. But the central point is that the shot is from the front that we make in the movie. So if they were going to tamper with the film, why wouldn't they tamper with that? As it stands, the film is very damaging. And I think the tampering question is less important. I think the files at the House Select Assassinations Committee are fascinating. There's a number of people that have been interviewed. And if there are no exemptions made and we can see those files, I think it will be... we have the 201 file on Oswald, Some of it's still with the CIA. We have Santos Traficante, Richard Case Nagel, William Sullivan, number three man in the FBI. He was the director, I believe, of covert operations in 63. Sullivan was interviewed before his suicide. He was killed in a hunting accident. Somebody thought he was a deer and shot him on his front lawn. Johnny Roselli and Sam Giancana obviously did not get to testify. We have Atlee Phillips, the CIA man. We have Delphine Roberts, who was the secretary to Guy Bannister, Marina Oswald, Wally Weston, impresario, comic in the Jack Ruby Carousel Club. George de Morenshield is there. Dean Andrews, who was played by John Candy in the film, is in that file. William Walter, the FBI guy who found the telex. The Dallas doctors, the Bethesda doctors. We have the 43 hours of Cuban exiles. We have Frank Sturgis. We have Joe Militier. The JFK hearings, like whatever that means, they say JFK hearings, 47 hours. This is stuff that's still under file. We would like to see it. Even if this comes out, there is still the issue of what the CIA has, and no one really knows what they have. I think Jim Lazar and Gus Russo of the National Archives, under the Freedom of Information Act, have found out that they could not get any of the files because the CIA said, we have 300,000 pages, we can't Xerox it and give it to you. So that's all we know, is there's 300,000 pages at one point was with the CIA. Mr. Tannenbaum, who was the counsel to the committee, the House committee, said that there are 850 boxes and a bunch of film and audio. Beyond that, beyond the CIA, and very few people ever point to it, is that the military intelligence files have never come to the surface. The Army Intelligence Group claimed in 1973 that those files were, quote, routinely destroyed. Routinely destroyed, although we know that Harvey Lee Oswald was on a file. I suggest that they unroutinely find them. ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence, those files, we don't know where they are. We have a strong belief that Oswald was involved with ONI. FBI files on Guy Bannister. The moment Guy Bannister died in New Orleans, the FBI came and took his files. Where are they? So it is filtered all over this government. And obviously, this is where the people play a role. And if democracy works, then the president, whoever he be, should be responsive to the desire of the American people to be at one with their own history. But as Norman Mailer said very wittily in his Vanity Fair speech, he thinks that even if we could get into some of these files, it's a bit like leaving a Mercedes in the South Bronx for 20 years. You know, what's left? John has written me a note here that there are still some Vietnam files that are classified and extremely important.
What is your reaction today to reports today that reputed mobster Carlos Marcello and other alleged mafia members aligned with Jimmy Hoffa in the assassination?
I tried to talk to Carlos in New Orleans. I got as far as his brother, who denied everything. I would love to talk to Carlos. He's 94 years old, and maybe somebody in our government or one of you journalists could go and talk to him. However, I stand by what the film says about the mafia, that we certainly know now that the mafia worked with the CIA and was used by the CIA. We have documents that show the CIA used crime elements in various countries to do some of its work. They work hand in hand, as discussed in several scenes in the movie. But Mr. Garrison in the film says it is just inconceivable to him that the mafia would have the organizational ability to bring an Oswald in and out of Russia, to get him a job in a book depository, to design the parade route and motorcade in such a way that it would bring Mr. Kennedy beneath the building in such a way. And beyond that, how would the mob cover up the autopsy and appoint the Warren Commission?
Your depiction of Garrison as Robin Hood is grossly distorted. Clay Shaw was acquitted in less than an hour, a fact you conveniently ignore. Garrison was using Shaw as a clay pigeon. He wanted to be governor and was using Shaw to gain fame. Please comment.
Why anyone would, in 1967, seek to be a governor of a state by going against it, the CIA and the entire government suggesting they killed its president is beyond me. Your political life, Jim's political life was over the moment he brought those charges. He was taking on the establishment in a major way, and he paid a heavy price for it. As to the case itself, I just would want to remind you that he has been vilified and trashed over and over and over again in the press. He has now become a non-person in a sense that Stalin's opponents, Bukharov and Trotsky, became non-persons. There are no specifics that are ever brought up. It's been a media mantra, a buzzword, a coda, a credo. The journalists cite each other to substitute for critical analysis. Jim had an interesting history. He was an FBI man. He was a war hero. He was elected 3 times DA of New Orleans. Why? Not by the establishment, but because he was popular. He was unpopular in the press, in the Times-Picayune. He was unpopular with Clay Shaw's friends. He was unpopular with the establishment of New Orleans. But he was elected 3 times. And then he's since become an appellate judge in that same city after the trial. He had a case. There were 2 evidentiary hearings. He went to a 3-judge panel, criminal judges. He presented his facts. Those 3 judges in 1967 said, go to trial. He went to a grand jury of 12 jurors. They said, go to trial. It was hardly the frolic described, and it was not a whim. He had witnesses, and he had evidence. 3 major witnesses, however, died before he could get to trial. Obviously Oswald, obviously Ruby is part of it, but we have Guy Bannister, and we have David Ferry. These were key witnesses in the possible connection of Shaw, Bannister, and Ferry. Since the trial found significant evidence that Shaw knew Oswald, not only through Perry Russo, but through the Clinton witnesses from Clinton, Louisiana, 10 people, 8 of them black, I believe, pointed to Shaw as being in Clinton that day with Lee Oswald at a core rally. Dean Andrews pointed to Clay Shaw, or pointed to a man called Clay Bertrand, who Jim found out to be Clay Shaw. That testimony was thrown out of court by the judge in the scene that we show in the movie with the officer not being allowed to testify. We do believe that Clay Shaw was Clay Bertrand. The jury came back and said that there was no that Shaw was not guilty, but they all, when they were polled after the trial, they said that Jim Garrison had convinced them that there had been a conspiracy to kill Kennedy, but they couldn't make the link to Clay Shaw. By the way, Jim Garrison did make his summation speech. Several people have said he did not. He did make that summation speech. And 80% of it is in the movie, in the scene. We added some from his Playboy interview and a couple of little polishes from me, but essentially that is his speech and that is his summation. Judge Haggerty, who presided over the case and who, in a sense, hurt Jim's case by refusing to take the Clay Bertrand testimony, said after Clay Shaw died, he waited until Clay Shaw died in 73, he said in a television interview, "I do believe to this day that the jury should have found Clay Shaw guilty. I do not believe Clay Shaw told the truth at the trial." After the trial, we come in possession of a picture that shows that Clay Shaw and David Ferry were at a party together. I think that Shaw perjured himself time and again at that trial, denying that he knew Oswald, denying that he knew Ferry, and denying that he was a member of the CIA, which we find out that he was. Call him what you want, domestic contact, et cetera, he was, has a history with the CIA. It was pointed out by Richard Helms. Finally, under oath, he told the truth. And Victor Marchetti supports that theory, saying that during the trial, Mr. Helms was very concerned with the fate of Clay Shaw and offered all the help he could. In addition to that, we now know that Mr. Shaw was on the board of directors of Permindex, a fascist organization in Italy that was thrown out of Italy for illegal espionage activities. Among them, promoting financial transactions and the attempted assassination of Charles de Gaulle, the president of France. So I do not think we have here this innocent businessman pictured by the press. I think we have a serious case that was brought and lost and failed, and we have, that is as it is, but there is something more than meets the eye. I would liken Jim Garrison's case somewhat to the Lawrence Walsh case of the 1980s when he tried to bring that same covert arm of the government to the light of day, and he failed. Jim's subpoenas on Dulles, on Cabell, on Helms were all squashed by the Justice Department in Washington, and four witnesses were not returned to New Orleans by the four governors of four different states. Why? It's the first time it ever happened to Jim.
Did you at any point have reason to doubt the integrity of the Garrison book? Weren't you warned before you started filming by a reputable JFK researcher that you couldn't believe what Garrison said and that you would be misleading the country all over again if you made a hero out of him?
Well, I believe I answered that same question, that I obviously had heard all the horror stories on Jim, and we investigated everything, and we cannot come up with any of these charges. We heard one charge with Anthony Lewis of the New York Times said that he bribed witnesses. Well, this is a civil libertarian charging this, and we checked it out, and there's no evidence of a bribe. The two witnesses that supposedly were bribed said so on television, and when Jim brought a subpoena against them, they refused to sign and to admit, to repeat what they said on television. So, you know, show us the evidence. Give Jim the same benefit of the doubt that Clay Shaw has, or I think that we've been treating Jim with a double standard. We've been treating Jim like Lee Harvey Oswald.
Why didn't the Kennedy family insist on a new investigation in light of the Garrison evidence?
According to Frank Mankiewicz, Mr. Robert Kennedy was stunned and in shock. His power was immediately, I think, cut off in a sense, because the Warren Commission was appointed by Mr. Johnson, and they took over the investigation. I don't think that Robert Kennedy was even thinking about that at that time. And then 5 months later, he was removed or left office, and another attorney general came in, Ramsey Clark, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong. It is interesting to note, and Mr. Mankiewicz has confirmed it, that several weeks before his death, Robert Kennedy, when asked at a college in Southern California, would he reopen the investigation into his brother's death if he were elected president, said yes, he would. As to the rest of the Kennedy family, I've heard nothing from them. I'm sure that it is a subject of great pain to them, and I sympathize with them, but I do think that this is a much larger issue than the Kennedy family issue.
The National Archives claims that the autopsy photos were donated by the Kennedy family and, as such, are excluded under the Freedom of Information Act. Is this correct, and did you request do a FOIA request?
Can I go on to the next one? I'm going to run this by the researcher.
Your art has a point of view and a message. How is it different from propaganda?
I think that's a good question. And I don't quite have the answer to it. I have always said this film is a hypothesis. It is a combination of fact, as far as we know them, and speculation. And I have, as I've pointed out in numerous interviews and in an article in Premiere Magazine, I have pointed out where we have made composites and taken dramatic license.
Did you mean to imply in JFK that the U.S. government might be implicated in the assassinations of both Martin Luther King Jr. and Bobby Kennedy?
Yes.
Why are you so fixated on the 60s?
No, the better question is, what did you think of the Saturday Night Live skit? I thought he was better. He should be up here, that actor. I'm fixated on the 60s. I'm not. I've done three movies about the 80s, Wall Street, Salvador, and Talk Radio. I do think that the 60s is a seminal decade. It was the seed of what is coming to bear now in the 90s and the 2000s, is that this next generation of leadership, whether it be Dan Quayle or whichever Democratic president, is all in this age group, and we all grew up in the 60s, and our attitudes and our thinking were shaped by the 60s. So, as I said in my speech, I do think that Vietnam is the watershed event of our time, and rather than be fixated on it, I think I've tried to move beyond it, and it's interesting that when I started the Kennedy movie, I never even saw the linkages until Garrison started to talk about them, Newman and Prouty, and then I said, my God, I'm back to Vietnam here.
What did you hope to achieve by excluding certain members of the press from the press screening of JFK?
Which one, Novak and Evans? Is that Frank Mankiewicz is doing? I don't know. Is that the Washington one we're talking about? I believe we screened the movie pretty widely. And our problem, of course, was time. We just finished about 7 or 8 days before our release. We were up against the wall. I'm sorry if certain people were left out, except for Mr. Novak or Mr. Evans. In answer to the earlier questions, the photos are excluded from the Freedom of Information Act, but the family gave them to the archives under the condition that serious medical researchers be allowed access. We did not file a FOIA. We obtained negatives from a researcher who inherited them from a Secret Service agent. The FOIAs do take years.
Before asking the last question, we'd like to thank you for being here. Have a certificate of appreciation and a National Press Club paperweight.
Great.
And the last question, you've taken on some of the most powerful institutions in America. When are you about to take on the press?
Starring Dan Rather. I think that's a great subject, and I think that oh, my God, it's showing us as we really are, thin-skinned, opinionated, hard-drinking scribes. I I think the press has taken on me, but whether I can take on the press is obviously something I would know being doomed in advance to bad reviews. I would have to think twice, but I do think it's a great subject, and possibly I will. Thank you.